Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Double Z Ag Sales out there in Weyburn for grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance. Give Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn a call. Also, Pizza Hut's in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies with David Dubé backing them and backing this podcast. If you're in the mood for pizza, make sure it's Pizza Hut. Oh, I just love their breadsticks. Mark Greshner Photography. Check out his fine work. He takes amazing photos. I had him do some work for me personally with my son's grad. Some great family photos there. Check it out at Mark Greshner.com, and you could see his work as he provides the backdrop, the photo of Mosaic Stadium for my podcast. Also, want to give a shout out to the boys next door, Window Cleaning, for window cleaning, pressure washing, and gutter cleaning. Make sure you're ready for the fall with theboysnextdoor.ca. You can check out their website there and book their services right there. They are booking up fast. We'll get to our other sponsors in a second, including this great segment. And this is the homegrown segment on Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by our great sponsor, Riviere Ag Seeds in southern Saskatchewan, in the Radville area. Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified Durham yellow peas and chickpeas. In our homegrown segment, none other than Gull Lake's Roger Aldag. Let's go back to 1976. A young, fresh-faced Roger Aldag is on the sidelines for the Rough Riders. And, you know, were you thinking, Matt, I know it was a tough loss. It was the Gabriel touchdown, Clemens to Gabriel. But were you thinking, we're going to be back here again, so no big deal?
Yeah, I've often said that, Michael, because the fact that, on the sidelines, and my good friend Larry Bird, we were on the sidelines together because he tore up his knee and my ankle and stuff like that. But, you know, after the game's over, you see the crusty veterans, like, it's devastating. It was devastating for us as well, myself, being a young first year. But then you just think, oh, well, next year we'll get it. But we didn't realize that 11 years after the fact that we wouldn't be in the playoffs. So that was a little hard to go through. Yes.
How tough, Rog, was it to go through those 11 years before you guys eventually made it? The whole 11 years, that's enough, and you finally made it in 1988. But how hard was it for you to go through those 11 years?
Well, it was hard, but again, we played a game we love. I mean, when I look at it, I had great teammates over those years, and it was just a matter. I think a lot of times we had some bad luck there. You know, we also had some bad teams, but it was, nobody forced us to do it. We just wanted to just keep going on, and like myself and my good friend Bob Pulley, Jerson Illibrin, the late Brian Illibrin, we just discussed, like, someday we're going to turn this around and we're going to, you know, like the Undertaker, Bill Baker said, you got to get lucky to win. And you know what? Certain parts of the season we were lucky, but we also had a good team, and I think we deserved to win the Grey Cup in 1989.
I want to talk about that in a second, but I want to ask you, because I see George Reed, he's been into our control room, still doing great work in the community, but he's struggling to walk now, and what he put his body through. Let me ask you this. Can you answer this question? But you're a good guy to ask it to. Who's the greatest rider of all time?
Oh, boy, I tell you what, like, you know, obviously Ronnie and George. You don't expect me to say one, do you?
I was hoping you would, but I guess you're not going to.
And then, of course, my heroes those days were all, everybody's like Ronnie and George, but a guy like me, like Ted Ernest. Mm-hmm. He is an offensive line, you know, that I watched all the time, and I tell you what, it'd be hard pressed to find anybody better than him as well. So I mean, you could pretty well mention any of those guys from that era for myself, and there's great players now as well. I mean, it's over the years, but that's kind of the guys that I really enjoyed watching.
Hey, Rog, how's your body holding up? Because I talked about George, you know, the guy carried it 35 times a game. Everybody knew he was going to get the football. There was no platooning, this back coming in, that back coming in. My favorite George Reed line is, hey, George, why don't you run to the huddle? Because they don't get paid to run that way. Only get paid to run one way. But how's your body holding up, Rog, after all these years?
Well, actually, Baldy, it's holding up pretty good. I mean, I still like to go to the gym. I go to my favorite gym in Lumsden, and I go there, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. And to me, that's good for my the mental part and also just the fact of just keeping my body, because if I don't do a whole lot, I kind of seize up a little bit like everybody else my age. But I enjoy that. I mean, I didn't come unscathed, obviously, because my wrist, I got a little bit of problem there, and then I had a hip replaced and stuff like that. But actually, for many wrecks that we've been in over the years, when you play 17 years in the CFL, but nobody forced us to do it. We enjoyed it. I'd do it all over again, and I loved it, and got to play a team game with a lot of great, great people.
Now, when did you kind of have a feeling that you had something special in 1989? Did it go back to 1988, or was there a point in the 89 season where you thought, okay, we got something going here?
Well, again, I mean, with Edmonton, them being the team that everybody was looking at to probably have to beat, but as it carried on, like I knew in 89, like we had Kent and Burgey, I mean, our two great quarterbacks, and then we had a lot of other great players. I know it was Algard and Fairholme had a few injuries in 89 there. I mean, they missed the game or so or whatever, but, you know, guys stepped in and filled in, and I really think that it was just a team atmosphere that we had, that we believed in each other as teammates, and it was just a matter that, we went out there and we just took her one game at a time. I mean, again, we didn't have the greatest season in the world either when you come in at 500. I mean, it's but we, the playoffs, like we often talk about it, you know, you hear a guy like Ray Algard or somebody like that mention, like, we didn't get lucky to win the Grey Cup. I mean, we beat, especially when you talk about like the Western semifinal in Calgary, mm-hmm. You know, that was a tough game. You go to Edmonton to beat them in Edmonton. But we did beat them there. And we probably had a little luck on our side for the Grey Cup, because Hamilton was a great team and the bounce went our way a little bit for a few of the plays. And I think after all these years, I think maybe we deserved it.
was there any way you were losing that Grey Cup after knocking off the juggernaut Tracy Hamlet Edmonton Eskimos? Like, there was no way you were losing to Hamilton, even though it was a close game.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, we just, but we knew there's a lot of work to do as far as, going to the Grey Cup, and with Hamilton was a great team as well. So just, thank God that Mr. Ridgeway kicked the winning field goal. And, I mean, that's something that will stick with me for the rest of my life. And I know, like, Rider Nation and the fans were just great for everybody.
Did you allow yourself to watch that ball go through, or did you close your eyes?
I'm not sure what I did. I looked like I was jumping around like an idiot there for a while anyhow. But it it was a great feeling. And then, you know, the defense had to finish it off because there's a few seconds left in the clock, but yeah. It worked out.
What do you remember the feeling? What was that like to finally, after all those years, hoist the trophy with your buddy Bob Poley and hold on to that thing? Because honestly, I thought when I saw Alexander Ovechkin a couple of years ago carrying that Stanley Cup around with the Capitals, I immediately thought of you and Poley, because it was like you guys won that championship, and rightfully so, because you didn't want to let that sucker go.
Well, that's very nice to compare us to him, but I mean, we're just Saskatchewan farm offensive linemen. I mean, but the thing is, yeah, that's great. I mean, especially for guys like myself that are born and raised here, like Bob and I, and my brother Barry played for the Rough Riders, and I remember all those years where they lost, you know, a couple Grey Cups where they could have won and stuff like that, and it just seemed like kind of snake bit as far as the Rough Riders. And it's just, you know, that feeling it's when I talk to some of the, you know, greats in the CFL, like a John Helton and guys like that, that never ever won a Grey Cup. I mean, I consider myself very fortunate now that I look back, that it had been one heck of an empty feeling if I would never ever won at least one.
Yeah, there's a good question for you, Raj. Would your career have been unfulfilled if you didn't win a championship? I guess where I'm going with this is, we hear a lot of times, well, he didn't win a championship, so he's not a Hall of Famer. Do you think a guy's career is defined by winning and losing the big game?
Well, it certainly helps. I know for feeling for ourselves, I mean, that would, like, it's one of those where it'd be a pretty empty feeling. I mean, after you retire, I mean, sure, you had your opportunity to play with in front of the best fans in the world and the greatest teammates and stuff like that, but not winning a championship, it's like a Grey Cup to me is something that, wow. I mean, I'm just considered myself to this day to be very fortunate to be on that team and have the right people to win it for us and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I mean, it had been a pretty empty feeling.
And lastly, it's pretty neat that your buddy Bob Poley came back to the Riders, because if people remember correctly, he was with the Calgary Stampeders in the mid-'80s and then came back to Saskatchewan. It just kind of lined up that you got to win the Cup with your good buddy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was just a great deal. Like, they brought Bob back in, and it was just kind of where he belonged all along. But he had the opportunity. I know he enjoyed his years in Calgary there as well, too, because I always remember one time we're playing in Montreal, and they're playing whatever on a Friday night, and he phones us at 2 in the morning, "Hey, Ron, we're in the playoffs." Click. That's the first time I ever hung up on Bob Poley.
I love that. That's a great story. That's a great story. I love that. That's awesome. We'll end it on that. Thanks for this, Raj.
Hey, thanks, Walsy. Have a good day.
And it's time now for the Pick 6, brought to you by the SAS Selects football program out there, operating out of the Yar Center in Moose Jaw, building the stars of tomorrow today. They've got a 7-on-7 league that they're launching. It's junior varsity, varsity, and adult 7-on-7 as they continue to grow the game of football during this pandemic. Great work done by Zelko Stefanovic, his wife Deb, and all the people out there with the SAS Selects football program. Number one on the Pick 6, the Jacksonville Jaguars waived running back Leonard Fournette less than 2 weeks before their 2020 season opener, the team announced today. Jacksonville drafted Fournette with a 4th overall pick in the 2017 draft. He was entering the final year of his rookie contract after the team declined his 5th-year option in May. Now, Fournette's departure highlights a number of offseason changes in Jacksonville, as well as another short-lived stint for one of the team's high draft picks. None of the Jaguars' first-round picks from 2012 to 2017 are still on the team. The Jags are a joke. You wonder why some teams suck all the time. Exhibit A right there. Jamal Murray's become the poster child for Canadian basketball right now. He had another 50 for the Nuggets in a 119-107 win over the Jazz to force the first Game 7 in the bubble. It'll be the 3rd straight Game 7 for the Nuggets, who beat San Antonio before losing to Portland last year. The Nuggets, with that experience, will win the game in my estimation. Of course, with Murray having the hot hand. Great to see Canadian basketball players excelling. Teoscar Hernandez hit a 2-run single with 2 out in the 9th, lifting the Jays yesterday to a 6-5 win over the Orioles. Now, I'm not a fan of the Blue Jays, but they're fun to watch, and who knows, in this 60-game season, they could do something. That's why my Padres are wheeling and dealing. They've made 5 trades over the last few days. By the way, I love the old-school Padres and Brewers jerseys, but then I'm a child of the 80s. Makes me think of Gwynn and Garvey and Yount and Molitor. Number 4 on Ballsy's Pick 6, Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez have backed out of bidding to purchase the New York Mets. Earlier this month, the New York Post reported that J-Lo and A-Rod had retained J.P. Morgan Chase to raise funds for a potential bid on the team. J-Lo wanted to buy the team because it was her dad's favorite baseball team. Now, ownership would also be personal for Rodriguez, who almost signed with the team in 2000, although he opted to play for the Rangers instead. Let's be honest, the two of them could pay for a team, but they couldn't pay for all the mirrors they'd need in the owner's box. So something had to go. They went with the mirrors and not the team. I joke, but you know there might be an element of truth to that one. The Big Ten football season looking at starting at American Thanksgiving. Now, I watch with interest as my own son Ethan's in North Dakota quarantining after coming into contact with a teammate who tested positive. So far, he's had 5 negative tests, so thank God for that, I guess. Although he told me on the phone the other day, "Hey, Dad, I wish I'd just get this thing and then move on, because I'll come out of this quarantine and then I'll get it and have to go back in for 2 weeks." Well, I don't know if you want an unknown virus, but I can kind of understand where he's going with it. Anyway, the next 3 weeks will provide clarity. Students are back in school and in most cases on campus. They already have seen a number of spikes of coronavirus, and there's the potential for more. Several schools have responded by moving to full online learning. I say, if you've got the kids there already and they're contaminated, keep them contained. Don't send them back to their homes where they can spread the virus. I don't even have a medical degree, and I know that. The Big Ten and Pac-12 have postponed fall sports. The ACC and Big 12 are going to begin their football seasons on September 10th and 12th, respectively. The SEC scheduled to follow suit on September the 26th. The big question for me is this. Much of the public conversation is focused on the question of whether playing sports will make the athletes, coaches, and personnel less safe. Well, how about this? Will these people actually be safer if the seasons go on? Now, I know this firsthand. I just talked about it with my son. Athletes who are in season are going to be tested for coronavirus on a weekly basis, and in some cases, multiple times per week, depending on the school's budget. They would be surrounded by trainers and medical staff, take part in extensive contact tracing, and be subjected to strict protocols. They'll also be incentivized to limit their exposure when they're not around their teams. That's a stark contrast to how things would be if they went home. Like, the structure is better. I don't understand this. How can we send kids to school but not have them play sports? Once again, we're picking and choosing where we can get the virus. Anyway, the 2020 college football season started with a lot of excitement this past Saturday night. The first play from scrimmage went the distance. And in case you forgot what football sounded like, well, here's what it sounded like. Number six on Ballsy's Pick Six. How do you feel about the chirping that goes on in sports? Vegas Golden Knights' Ryan Reeves is chirping. He really likes to get under the opponent's skin. Gets under my skin watching him from my recliner at home. Anyway, he's like Matthew Tkachuk of the Flames, only not as talented. He's a guy you hate unless he's on your club. Then you love him. Last night he was chirping with the Canucks coach Travis Green. In the last game, he was chirping with the Canucks coach Travis Green. Now, there is one sure way to shut Reeves up. Because he's not that good of a player, you get a lead, and then the bench gets short for the Vegas Golden Knights, and Reeves doesn't see the ice surface. That's how you shut him up and contain him. Canucks, the ball's in your court. Time now to speak to our Athlete of the Week, brought to you by Paul Waldo over there at Royal LePage in Regina. If you want to get in the real estate game, give the three-time Grey Cup champ a call at 306-502-5355. We're speaking with Torin Swiston Burness. That's quite a handler. That's a nice handle, my friend.
Thank you.
How does that fit on the back of a jersey?
It doesn't. I don't even know how that works. If they have to shrink it down or cut it in half.
Do you have a nickname?
Yeah, some of the boys call me Big T. That's what my dad used to call me back in the day. Mm-hmm. And some of my coaches just call me Punk because I'm always bugging them.
that's good. Let's give the people a background on you here. Tell them about your football background. What position do you play, and some of the accolades you've received so far?
Well, I play mostly defensive end for Martinsville Royals. I played Martinsville Mad Dogs mm-hmm. at first, but before that, I played flag football for 3 years. With Saskatoon Minor football too, and then after Mad Dogs, I got into football academy with SMF again, mm-hmm. and tried out first year for Team Sask. Didn't make it. Second year tried out, I got captain of North Sask, and then tried out for Team Sask and got captain for Team Sask. Went to Kamloops to play football. We won undefeated gold. Mm-hmm. And then I was announced to the Western All-Star team. And then I was announced to the top 100. And now I'm also announced to the top 150 on CFC.
Awesome. So, what are your plans in this game? Like, do you want to go to university, junior ball? What are your aspirations in this game, Torin?
Well, I'm hoping to get a chance to play in like the States or somewhere like out of the province, mm-hmm. like don't get me wrong, Husky football is great. I'd love to play for them, but if I get the chance to do something with football, that'd be my dream come true.
Mm-hmm. You always got to have a plan after football. Is there anything? I know you're only going into grade 11, so you got lots of time, but have you thought about what you'd like to take in school, or is that a little too early just yet?
I might take something to do with, like, kinesiology. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet. I'm also thinking of, like, business.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
What do you like best about the game of football, Torin?
I have two. Hitting. Mm-hmm. I love hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I get a big hit, like, all my adrenaline comes out, and I don't know, it just feels great. And the teamwork. I'm still friends with most of the guys I played flag football with. Like, and all my friends on my football team are like brothers.
Yeah, flag football is a great introduction into the world of football. What did you like about flag football that then carried over into wanting to get more aggressive and put on the pads and tackle?
Well, as a kid, I was a pretty, pretty stocky kid. Like, I was always the biggest in my class. I was always most rough and clumsy. So my parents were like, "Do you know what? Let's try this kid out in football, in flag football." And that didn't go over that well at the start because I just kept on pushing everybody down. And then they're like, "Okay, well, now it's time to put them in the actual football." And I killed it first year. And, yeah, I've been playing ever since.
Who's been the most influential coach for you so far early on? You're still a young guy going into grade 11 at Martinsville High School, but who's been the most influential coach for you so far, Torin?
Probably Coach Grant. For the Martinsville Mad Dogs, or Coach Gilkinson from Team Sask and Bethlehem Stars in Saskatoon.
So what makes those guys so good?
Well, for Coach Grant, just always encouraging me, always coming to see my games, even though, like, I don't play for him anymore. Like, the coach mentality is still there, trying to coach me up after my games. And with Gilkinson, he's always trying to improve and make me better. And just every single time I see him, he always has something new to tell me and new tricks I can use on the field. Mm-hmm. And that's great.
What's your go-to move to get to the quarterback as a 6'2", 210-pound defensive end? What's your go-to move? You got, like, the Charleston Hughes spin, or what do you got going on there?
Oh, no, I just go with brute strength, dip and rip, baby.
That's good. I love it. Hey, just a shout-out to Saskatoon Minor Football and the gang there in Saskatoon trying to help you young football players out in the COVID-19 world. Is they're really trying to get something going for you guys in the fall, even though you can't have a full fall season, per se?
Yeah, Brian Giebert and the whole crew there is trying real hard. And, like, I'm really happy for what they're doing for us. Like, now we have a full academy because we don't have football for high school, mm-hmm. which is pretty crappy because all of us boys want to play, especially the seniors, because it's their last year to get the chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, the fact that all these coaches and all the staff came together and put something together for us boys means a lot.
All right, and lastly, Torin, who do you look up to, like, in terms of athletes you look up to? Maybe there's somebody on the Huskies, or maybe there's a professional guy you look up to where you want to model your game after them. Would you have a couple of those?
Yeah, I do, actually. My top two are probably Khalil Mack, because just the way he plays and his attitude about the game gets me pretty pumped up. And The Rock, just because, like, after you got dropped from the Stampeders, you kept on going, kept on striving to do something.
Interesting. I like that. A lot of people like The Rock. He'd be a good guy to look up to. Now he's owning his own football league. Torn, but let me ask you something. Do you watch the CFL?
I love the CFL. Watch it every single time there's a game on.
So who do you look up to in the CFL? Because here's what I always hear when I ask young guys like you, and this isn't a cut down to you. I ask young guys, hey, who do you model yourself after? They're like you. They pick like a Luke Kuechly or a Khalil Mack or a Joey Bosa, but they're all NFL guys. Hardly ever do they say a CFL guy. Why do you think that is?
To be honest, I don't know. It just, first thing that comes to your mind is like the top of the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's all about players' attitude and how they react on the field. And like, I'll watch all these games and see people flip out in the NFL, get in a big fight or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not my thing. So like, those guys aren't my role models, but
yeah. Who do you like in the CFL, Torin?
Justin Hughes.
Yeah.
He's number one.
Yeah,
he's the tank of the Riders.
How about Willie Jefferson?
Yeah, Willie Jefferson's good, besides the fact that he moved.
Yeah, Winnipeg Blue Bombers, we can't like him. Hey, Torin, thanks for this. Best of luck, and here at Growing the Game with Ballsy, we'll be watching to see how you do, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a great one.
You too, man. Take care. That is some interesting insight from a young kid, Torin Swiston-Burness from Martinsville High School. Right there, man. The guy loves the CFL, but he doesn't mention the CFL first. He mentions the NFL. And he tells you in his words why he does. And it's apples and oranges. They have more money than we do, but they do a better job of marketing. Those kids gravitate to the marketing. They gravitate to the bells and whistles. The CFL doesn't do a great job of marketing. And the CFL has to do a better job of keeping the dream alive for young kids to make them believe, even if it's still a long shot, that a guy like Torin Swiston-Burness can run out of the tunnel on game day at Mosaic Stadium and be a Rough Rider down the line. And a lot of times it's like, well, you know, we like Canadians, but as long as they're on the sidelines or bit players, we don't, you know, we can't really have them. Like, we don't have enough good ones to add more Canadians. I'm going to continue to bang that drum. I do not agree. I'll be interested to watch Torin's career and others like him.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.